Hello, everyone. We're continuing on with Thomas Manton, an exposition with notes upon the Epistle of Jude. Last time we did verse 12. These are spots in your feasts of charity, when they feast with you, feeding themselves without fear. Clouds they are without water, carried about of winds. Trees whose fruit withereth, without fruit, twice dead, plucked up by the roots. And Lord willing, we're going to continue on with verse 13, and we'll go ahead and start that now. Verse 13, raging waves of the sea, foaming out their shame, wandering stars, to whom is reserved the blackness of darkness forever. Now, here are two other comparisons, the one taken from raging waves and the other from wandering stars. For the first, raging waves of the sea, foaming out their own shame, there's a great deal of variety among interpreters in the application or accommodation of this similitude. Some go one way, some another. Waves are not more various and uncertain in their motions than they in their expositions. Some apply it to their levity and inconstancy, some to their restless activity in sin, some to their turbulency, others to their pride and ostentation. In such uncertainty, what shall we fix upon? Two things will direct us, the scope and the force of the words. The scope of the apostle in all these similitudes is to show that these seducers were nothing less than what they pretended to be, clouds, but dry, barren clouds, trees, but such as bore either none or rotten fruit, waves that seemed to mount up unto heaven and to promise great matters, as if they would swallow up the whole earth, but being dashed against a rock, all this raging and swelling turns into a little foam and froth. So Calvin applies it to the libertines, who scorn and disdain the common forms of speech and talk of illumination and deification, so that their hearers seem to be rapt into the heavens, but alas, they suddenly fall into beastly errors. Observation number one, from the scope observe that spiritual boasters will certainly come short of their great promises. All is but noise, such as is made by empty vessels. In the latter times you are troubled with boasters, 2 Timothy 3 verse 2, men that boast of depths and seem to be wise and knowing above the ordinary sort, that will pretend to show you new ways, a shorter cut to heaven, and rare discoveries of Christ and the gospel light, etc. But alas, in the issue, they leave you much more the servants of sin than you were before. But let us a little examine the force of the words. The whole similitude alludes to what is said of wicked men in general, Isaiah 57 verse 20. The wicked are like a troubled sea that cannot rest, whose waters cast up mire and dirt. Observation two, observe in the first place that they are waves, which notes their inconstancy. Genesis 49 verse 4, Reuben is as unstable as water. Water, you know, is movable, soon furled, and driven to and fro by winds. So were these, carried about with every wind of doctrine, Ephesians 4:14. Note thence, for from that seducers are unsettled and uncertain in their opinions, so 2 Peter 3:16, unlearned and unstable. If you ask why, because they are not rooted and grounded in their profession, but led by sudden affection and interests rather than judgment. They are unstable because unlearned, such as do not proceed upon clear and certain grounds, and those whom they work upon are of no principle, beguiling unstable souls. Well then, discover them by their levity. You will never have comfort and certainty in following them who, like weathercocks, turn with every wind. I think that's probably like a weather vane. Esoblius is infamous to all ages. He was a professor of eloquence at Constantinople under Constantius, zealous of Christian religion, under Julian, a pagan, and when he was dead, he professed Christianity again. But then he came weeping to the church, and tread upon me unsavory salt and cast me to the dunghill. Constantius Chlorus, though a heathen, both Sozomen and Eusebius give us the story, yet loved constancy and faithfulness in men as to their profession. He made a proclamation that whosoever would not sacrifice should be discarded and no more retained in pay with him. But when many false Christians had renounced their profession for gain and preserving their civil interests, he would not receive them, saying, how can they keep faith with their king and emperor that would falter in a higher matter in the business of their God and religion for a small and petty interest? Much to the same purpose, there is a passage of Theodoric, king of the Goths, who loved a deacon who was of the Orthodox profession, though he himself was an Arian. The deacon, to please the king the more, changed his religion and professed Arianism also, but he beheaded him, saying, if you have not kept your faith with God, how will you preserve a good conscience in your duty to men? The story is in Theodoret. Some are merely waves rolling hither and thither in a doubtful uncertainty. And here are some words from the verse, waves of the sea. There you will have their restless activity. They are always tossed to and fro, Jeremiah 49:23. The Lord shall trouble Damascus, that she shall become like a fearful sea and cannot rest. So these cannot rest from evil, 2 Peter 2:14. Eyes full of adultery that cannot cease from sin. Observation, usually wicked men are of an unquiet spirit, restless in evil. They are acted by Satan, who is a restless spirit, and there is a great correspondency between their activeness in sin and the importunity, or continuing to try over and over again, of Satan's malice. 1 Peter 5:8, he goeth about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. Now you shall see the like diligence and readiness of his instruments. They walk the devil's round, Matthew 23:15. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye compass sea and land to make one proselyte, etc. Blind zeal leads on men with an incessant rage to poison others with their error and draw them to their sect. Well then, we may learn diligence from our enemies. Shall they be more busy to pervert the truth than we to propagate it? Daniel 12:4, many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. Once more, learn that it is a sign of a naughty heart to be restless in sin. Proverbs 4:16, they sleep not unless they have done mischief, and their sleep is taken from them unless they cause some to fall. The words of the verse again, raging waves of the sea. There you have their turbulency. They fill all places with troubles and strifes. Observation, wicked seducers are usually of a turbulent and impetuous spirit. Why? Because they are urged by their own pride and vanity and have lost all restraints of modesty and are usually, as to their constitution, of violent and eager spirits. Well then, be not borne down with impudence and rage. There may be daring attempts and much resolution in an ill cause. Beside, it is a hint to the magistrate to look to seducers betimes, for they are raging waves. The next expression is foaming out of their own shame, as a raging sea casts up mire and dirt, or it alludes to that scum and froth which the waves leave upon the rocks, and so it notes the abominableness of their opinions and practices. Whence note, or from that note, observation, that though errors come in blushing and with a modest dress, yet usually they go out of the world with a great deal of shame. They dash against the rock upon which the church is built, and what is the issue? They are covered with froth and foam, 1 Corinthians 3:13. The day shall declare it, that is, time, whose daughter truth is. Have a little patience, and you shall see that all that is but hay and stubble, which is accounted gold. When worldly interests are unconcerned, and the heat of contention a little allayed, that men may have more clear discerning, and the world has a little more experience of the fruit of false ways and opinions, there will not need any great confutation. Evil men will sufficiently bewray their own filthiness. Guccionardi said of the expedition of Charles IX into Italy that he came in like lightning and went out like the snuff of a candle. So errors come in like a raging wave, as if they would bear all before them, but they go out like foam and froth in scorn and infamy. Well then, observe the fruitlessness of all Satan's attempts. The gates of hell shall not prevail against this rock, Matthew 16, verse 18. By the gates of hell is meant strength and counsel, power and policy. For in the gates were the ammunition and seats of judicature. They that seek to slaver the church or deface the truth, which is the foundation of it, they do but spit against the wind. The drivel is returned upon their own faces. We often betray our trust and faith by our passions. We have not a holy greatness of mind to look above every trouble. Contend for God, but wait upon him. Satan may prevail a long time, but he can never carry it clearly from Christ. The Arians had a day of it, but they soon grew infamous for their cruelty and baseness. We come now to the next similitude, wandering stars. It may be taken two ways, properly or improperly. Number one, properly, for the stars which we call planets or wandering, though indeed no stars, wander less than they do. They have their name from the opinion and common judgment of sense, but because they are not carried about the whole circuit of the heavens, but in a shorter orb and course. In themselves they have certain stated motions and do keep the just points of their compass. The sun knoweth his going down, Psalm 104. Number two, improperly, there are a second sort of wandering stars, which Aristotle calls running and gliding stars, not stars indeed, but only dry exhalations inflamed, which glare much and deceive the eye with an appearance of light, but soon vanish and are quenched. That may be falling stars, I'm not sure. Now these glancing shooting stars do excellently express the quality of these seducers who pretended great knowledge, being therefore called Gnostics, and gave out themselves for illuminate and profound doctors, but were various and uncertain in their motions and soon extinguished and obscured. It is notable that the apostle ransacks all the elements for comparisons whereby to set them forth: the air, clouds without water, the earth, barren, rotten trees, the water, there he compares them to raging waves, the fire to wandering stars, which are of a fiery nature. A fruitful fancy can make use of all the world, and a willing mind cannot want or lack objects of meditation. But let us come to observe something from this similitude. Observation: the guides of the Lord's people should be stars, but not wandering or gliding stars. These seducers pretended to be stars and great lights of the church, which is the office of the ministers, but were indeed wandering stars, and such as did seduce and cause to error. First, stars they should be. Number one, in regard of the light of doctrine, Matthew 5:14, ye are the light of the world, that is Christ's honor, John 1 verse 9, but he takes his own crown and puts it upon his servants' heads. They are the light in a subordinate sense, stars though not the sun, S-U-N. He is the original and fountain of all light, and we are used as a means to convey it to others. So Christ is, and then ministers convey that light. Thus John is called in John 5:35, a burning and a shining light. He uses our service, minister's service, to dispel the mists of error, the night of profaneness, and the darkness of false worship. You had need prize those whom God has set over you. They are light, and will you quench the light of Israel? 2 Samuel 21:17. And number two, in regard of the luster of their conversations, which are behaviors of life, or how someone behaves, It is said of all Christians, Philippians 2:15, that they should shine as lights in this world. They are the bright part of the world, as the stars are the shining part of heaven. As the star directed the wise men to Christ, so they must shine to light others by their example to him, as it is required of all Christians, much more of ministers who are placed in a higher orb and sphere. Alas, we are but dim lights. We have our spots and eclipses, but this sets the world a-talking. Probably against Christianity, if because of those spots and eclipses. Secondly, they must not be gliding, falling stars that is charged upon these seducers. A false teacher and a falling star symbolizes in three respects. Number one, it is but a counterfeit star. So is he an angel of light, only in appearance. 2 Corinthians 11:14. A true Christian should covet more to be than to seem to be, to actually be than just to seem to be. To be light in the Lord before he is light in the world. Hypocrites are all for appearance. Number two, in respect of the uncertainty of its motion, falling stars are not moved with the heavens, but with the motion of the air hither and thither, and so are no sure direction. So are these people, inconstant and unstable in the doctrines which they teach, running from opinion to opinion, vagabond lights that seduce, not direct, as meteors mislead travelers out of the way. Number three, in regard of the fatal issue, a wandering star falls to the ground and becomes a dark slime and jelly. So their pretenses vanish at length, and they are found to be those that were never enlightened and fixed in the firmament of God. Counterfeits cannot last long. We see stars shoot in the turn of an eye, and Satan's instruments fall from heaven like lightning. Well then, for a guide to heaven, choose a star, but not a wandering star. New light is admired, but it should be suspected, rather. Usually we are rather for things new than excellent. We gaze more on a comet than the sun, S-U-N. Check this itch, or check yourself if you have this itch. Those that are various and given to changes are no lights for you, and if they be not burning and shining lights, avoid them. True stars have influences. They do not only enlighten and fill you with notions, but inflame and stir you to practice, proper godly practice, because of their example. The last clause of the text is, to whom is reserved blackness of darkness forever? Having described them in several metaphors, he comes to speak again of their punishment, continuing the last metaphor, as some suppose, as glaring meteors after the while vanish into the perpetual night and darkness and are no more seen and heard of. So these vanish and are swallowed up in the horrors of eternal darkness. In this threatening, three things are notable. Number one, the dreadfulness of the punishment. Number two, the sureness. And number three, the suitableness of it. Number one, the dreadfulness in two circumstances. Number one, the nature of it. Number two, the duration of it. Number one, the nature of it, the blackness of darkness. It is a Hebraism for exceeding great darkness, called in the gospel outer darkness, as being furthest from God, the fountain of life and glory, and so expressing that extreme misery, horror, and torment which is in hell. Hell is a dark and dismal region where men lie deprived of the light of God's countenance, tormented with the presence of devils, and become the burden of their own thoughts, calling to remembrance their past sins, and having an active sense of their present pains, and dreadfully looking still for future judgment. But of this and this topic he spoke of before, footnote C, verse 6, on those words, chains of everlasting darkness, and verse 7, the words, eternal fire. Well then, let us not begin our hell ourselves by shunning God's presence, by preferring carnal pleasures before the light of his countenance, by remaining in the night or darkness of ignorance or error, by darkening the glory of our holy profession through scandalous living, by sinning against conscience, and so providing food for the gnawing worm or matter of despair to ourselves to all eternity. Briefly, let us beware of a dark and doubtful condition. It carries too great a proportion with hell. The more bondage we have, the more fearful looking of judgment, the more are we like the damned, as the more assured and possessed of God's love, the more like the blessed. Joy in the Holy Ghost is the suburbs of heaven. Number two, the next thing is the duration, the blackness of darkness forever. The torment prepared for the wicked is everlasting. Their worm dieth not, and their fire is not quenched. Mark 9, verse 44. This is the hell of hell, that as the torments there are without measure, so without end. Here they might have life and would not, and now would have death and cannot. Revelation 20, verse 10, tormented forever and ever. Woe, alas, it is forever. Poor wicked wretches, whose bodies shrink at the prick of a pin or the flame of a candle, how will they endure those endless pains? When their restless thoughts shall have run through thousands of years, they must look for more. The pains of the damned are eternal, partly because of the greatness of the majesty against whom they have sinned. We are finite creatures, and so not fit to judge of the nature of an offense against an infinite God. The lawgiver best knows the merit of sin, which is the transgression of the law, as a jeweler knows the price of a jewel and can best give sentence in the case what he is to pay that has lost or spoiled it. With man, offenses of a quick execution meet with a long punishment, and the continuance of the penalty in no case is to be measured with the continuance of the act of sin. So you can murder someone very quickly, but that can end up being a long punishment. Partly because man sins as long as he can, we would live forever to sin forever. In hell, the desire of sinning is not extinguished or mortified. He has a footnote: wicked men are not changed in hell. Melted metal grows hard again. The bad thief had one foot in hell and yet dies blaspheming. Their judgments are changed, not their hearts. They would have dallied with God longer, grieved his spirit here in the world longer, but that their candle went out, etc. The next part: partly because they despised an eternal happiness and therefore do justly suffer an eternal torment. Partly because they are in their final estate, peace upon earth, Luke 2, verse 14. Here God is upon a treaty with us, but there we are beyond a possibility of repentance and pardon. Partly because their obligations to God are infinite, and so their punishment rises according to the excess of their obligations. Well, then, this represents the folly of sinners that will run the hazard of eternal torments for a little temporal satisfaction, as he cried out, "For how short a pleasure have I lost the kingdom," when he had parted with his sovereignty for a draught of water. So you, out of a desire to present contentment, forfeit heaven and run the hazard of the horrors of everlasting darkness. Therefore, to counterbalance the violence of a temptation, it is good to think of it: can I dwell with everlasting burnings? If a man be sick in the night, he tumbles and tosses and tells the hours and wishes it were day. Oh, what will a man do that is held under an everlasting night and darkness? We are wont or often to think a sermon long, a prayer long. What will hell be when conscience shall repeat over the passages of our lives and remember us of the wrath of God that endures forever? Here sin is ever working. All the day it runs in the mind, all the night it plays in the fancy. We begin the morning with it and end the day with it, and in the visions of the night it easily gets the start and outruns reason and conscience. There, in hell, the guilt of it will torment us day and night, and man is ever haunted with his own horrors and the wrath of God inflicted upon him. Number two, so much for the terribleness of the judgment. Now, secondly, let us consider the sureness of it. It is reserved. Hell torment is sure, prepared, and kept for the wicked. So Matthew chapter 25, prepared for the devil and his angels. Heaven is prepared for the saints, and they for it. In one place it is said, the kingdom prepared for you. In another, vessels of mercy aforehand prepared unto glory. So is hell fitted for the wicked, and they fit themselves for hell. God prepares the saints and fits them, but endures the wicked and bears with them while they fit themselves for destruction. See Romans 9, 22 and 23. Carnal men may lord it abroad for a while and ruffle and shine in worldly pomp, but the blackness of darkness is kept for them. And number three, observe the suitableness of the judgment to the sin. He says, darkness, not fire. Clouds that darken the truth are justly punished with the mists of darkness forever. See 2 Peter 2, verse 17. They that would quench the true light are cast into eternal darkness. God loves to retaliate that men may read their sin in the judgment here in the world. He may do it in mercy to the saints. Jacob that came the younger for the elder to blind Isaac had the elder daughter given him instead of the younger. Asa that put the prophet in the stocks was diseased in his feet. But in hell, he does it for the greater horror to the wicked. They that choose left-hand blessings, Proverbs 3:16, are justly placed with the goats on the left hand, Matthew 25. He that denied a crumb could not receive a drop. They that cared not for God's company are then banished out of his presence. And to those that loved darkness more than light is the mist of darkness reserved forever. All right, and that is the end of verse 13. And we'll stop there for this reading, and Lord willing, go on the next time. But until then, go in God's mercies, seeking his mercies and his light in your heart. And may we do that, seek his light in our hearts. And may we have the light of the knowledge and understanding of who God is and the heat of his graces so that our practice is holy. And Lord willing, we'll talk to you again soon.